10 million soldiers to the war have gone, who may never return again. 10 million mothers' hearts must break for the one who died in vain. Heads bowed down in sorrow in her lonely years, I heard a mother murmur through her tears, I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier. I brought him up to be my pride and joy.
Who dared to place a musket on his shoulder to shoot some other mother's darling boy?
Let nations arbitrate their future troubles.
It's time to lay the sword and gun away.
There'd be no war today if mothers all would say,
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
What victory can cheer a mother's heart when she looks at her blighted home? What victory can bring her back all she cared to call her own? Let each mother answer in the years to be, remember that my boy belongs to me.
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
I brought him up to be my pride and joy.
Who dared to place a musket on his shoulder to shoot some other mother's darling boy? Let nations arbitrate their future troubles. It's time to lay the sword and gun away.
There'd be no war today if mothers all would say,
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier. I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
I brought him up to be my pride and joy.
Who dares to place a musket on his shoulder to shoot some other mother's darling boy? Let nations arbitrate their future troubles. It's time to lay the sword and gun away.
There'd be no war today if mothers all would say,
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
Thanks for listening to great speeches and interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program starts off with, should we prohibit genetically engineered babies? Genetic engineering promises a world free of genetic diseases where parents control their offspring's height, eye color, and intelligence, but genes interact in ways that we don't fully understand, and there could be unintended consequences and new diseases that result. Is this science morally wrong? Could it lead to eugenics and a stratified society where only the rich enjoy the benefits of genetic enhancement? Or could the real injustice be depriving our children of these opportunities? And then after that, Andy Worthington discusses Guantanamo with Scott Horton. Andy Worthington is the author of The Guantanamo Files and the article, 11 Years After 9/11, Guantanamo is a Political Prison. Despite being long ago cleared for release, the many Guantanamo prisoners are still imprisoned. Why has Attorney General Eric Holder not prosecuted Bush-era torture?
Most of us would do almost anything for our kids to help them be their best, to help them get ahead. But what if, even before they were born, we could go in and alter their genes in such a way to give them an even greater advantage, to give them strength against illness and disease, to make them smarter or taller or prettier? Well, that world is coming. Who's tempted and who is horrified? Yes or no to this statement, prohibit genetically engineered babies. A debate from Intelligence Squared US. I'm John Donvan. I will be moderating as the four superbly qualified debaters you see on the stage argue for and against this motion, two against two, prohibit genetically engineered babies. As always, our debate goes in three rounds, and then the audience votes to choose a winner, and only one side wins. Let's meet our debaters. Arguing for the motion, prohibit genetically engineered babies, Sheldon Krimsky. And Sheldon, you are a professor at Tufts University and chair of the Council for Responsible Genetics. Your very first book in this area was published in 1982. It was a social history of what was then considered a very, very controversial new technology, gene splicing, which could lead to the mistake that you are a geneticist, but actually you are a philosopher.
A philosopher of science, and I deal with issues of ethics and also contested issues in science, and of course genetics provides great material.
Okay, and your partner is?
My partner is Professor Robert Winston.
Ladies and gentlemen, Robert Winston. Robert, you are a professor of science and society at Imperial College London, who not only did groundbreaking work in fertility studies, but also in the field of prenatal implantation genetic diagnosis. However, Renaissance man, you have also very often been a TV host. You are an award-winning theater director, and very recently you were the star of a reality television show in which you learned to play the saxophone, set out to play the saxophone. So if we brought a sax out right now, you could blow a few notes for us?
I would prefer the clarinet, I think.
Clarinet. Ladies and gentlemen, the team arguing for the motion. And again, our motion is prohibit genetically engineered babies. The two debaters arguing against it. Let's welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Nita Farahany. You are a professor at Duke Law, and you are a research professor at Duke's Institute for Genome Sciences and Policy. But in 2010, President Obama appointed you to the Commission on the Study of Bioethical Issues, and you're still on the member. So now that you've done science and you've done law, how are you liking politics?
I think I'll be politic and not answer that.
So you have debated before.
Yeah. Indeed.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nita Farahany. And Nita, your partner is?
My partner is the esteemed Lee Silver.
Lee Silver, ladies and gentlemen. Lee, you are also arguing against this motion to prohibit genetically engineered babies. You are a professor of molecular biology at Princeton. One of your landmark books was called Mouse Genetics. It's a book about mouse genetics. And those are relevant because mice and humans share an astounding number of genes. It's a very high percentage, isn't it?
I look at mice as little people.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Lee Silver. And those are our four debaters. On to round one, opening statements from each debater in turn. Our motion is prohibit genetically engineered babies. And here to argue first for the motion, Sheldon Krimsky, professor of humanities and social sciences at Tufts University. He is chair of the board of directors for the Council for Responsible Genetics and co-editor of the book Genetic Explanations, Sense and Nonsense. Ladies and gentlemen, Sheldon Krimsky.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The proposition before us today, to me, means that prenatal genetic modification of human reproductive cells, like sperm or eggs or fertilized eggs called the zygote, in preparation for gestation in the womb and development to full term infants should be prohibited at the societal level. And to this, I agree. There are two basic reasons to carry out such an intervention. One, for curing or preventing genetic disease, or two, for the enhancement of a person. For genetic diseases, in the great majority of cases, there are simpler, less risky, less costly, less ethically controversial, and more dependable methods of preventing the birth of a child with a severe genetic abnormality by using prenatal embryo diagnosis, that is, for diagnosing the embryos. Other than the exception, the only sensible rationale for engaging in genetic modification of the fertilized egg is for the enhancement of a child. Enhancement might include intelligence, resistance to disease, greater height, muscle strength, appealing personality, longevity, any number of things that you can imagine. Now, engaging in genetic modification of human gametes, the human reproductive cells, for enhancement is where I find the greatest moral failure and the greatest scientific folly. First, whatever enhancement is sought, the only method for determining whether it would work would be to engage in a clinical trial where you would have dozens of fertilized eggs or embryos, genetically modify half of them, carry them all to term, follow the development of the children throughout their lives to determine whether the intervention worked and at what expense to their health. From a biological and developmental standpoint, the so-called traits under consideration cannot remotely be enhanced by the modification of a gene or two. Traits like intelligence, personality, musicianship are complex and not only involve dozens, if not hundreds, of genes, but are the result of nutrition, social and environmental factors, genetic switches that are outside of the DNA, and the gene-gene interactions that occur in human cells. Scientists and the so-called transhumanists think of the human genome as a Lego set, where pieces of DNA can be plugged in or out without interfering with the other parts of the system. Actually, the human genome is more like an ecosystem, where all the parts interrelate and are in mutual balance. I am all for human enhancement, but it must start after an egg is fertilized, beginning in utero by protecting the fetus from toxic chemicals, and continuing postnatally through environmental, nutritional, and cognitive enhancement. Enhancement through genetic engineering of human germplasm is a fool's paradise and will lead to no good. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheldon Krimsky. Our motion is prohibit genetically engineered babies, and here to argue against this motion, Nita Farahany. She holds a joint appointment as professor of law and philosophy at Duke Law and as research professor at Duke's Institute for Genome Sciences and Policy. She is also a member of the Presidential Commission for the Study of Bioethical Issues. Ladies and gentlemen, Nita Farahany.
I'm here tonight to represent my personal views and not the President's Commission on Bioethics, of which I'm a member, about why we should not prohibit genetically engineered babies. But first, I want to convince you of two things: that we already can and have safely genetically engineered babies, and that a middle ground of prudent vigilance, public oversight, and debate about genetic engineering is better than prohibition. Throughout the evening, I'll defend why genetic engineering is no different in kind from the many ways that we already engineer our children, from the partners we choose, to prenatal screening, to the supplements we take that impact our children and their fates. But I want to convince you that we already can and have taken the next step of genetic engineering of babies, and if we would take a drastic step backwards to ban outright that technology. I'm going to tell you about inherited mitochondrial disorders, which are progressive and cause tragic health consequences. A little biology 101 should help frame the debate. About 98% of your DNA is nuclear DNA, but about 2% of your DNA is mitochondrial DNA, which supplies the energy to your cells. This nucleus of the cell is where 99.9% of the action is, but only if the mitochondria functions properly. About 1 in 5,000 babies born have problems with their mitochondrial DNA that cause rare but incredibly serious disease, including heart failure, dementia, blindness, severe suffering, and death. There is no way to treat the condition once it is acquired, and it is extremely difficult to predict how severely a child will be affected. Mitochondrial DNA, which is solely inherited from the mother, is often passed on to every child of an afflicted mother. Take, for example, Sharon, a woman who had a healthy pregnancy and who gave birth to a beautiful, healthy girl. 28 hours later, that baby died of an unknown disease. This tragic tale repeated itself 5 times as each of Sharon's babies lived for just a few hours. Only her son, Edward, survived, and by age 4, he started falling over repeatedly. He'll spend the rest of his life in a wheelchair with little control over his muscles. You see, Sharon has Lee's syndrome, a rare mitochondrial disease, and she passed it on to all 6 of her children. The only way that Sharon or any woman with a high level of mitochondrial abnormality will have her own healthy genetic children is through genetic engineering of the babies. We'll talk about 2 techniques to do so, pronuclear transfer and maternal spindle transfer, that safely eliminate the risk of these diseases. At least 30 children have already been born in the United States using an earlier version of mitochondrial transfer. All of these children were born free of mitochondrial disease, and these newer techniques have even fewer risks than those earlier ones and promise even better outcomes for future generations. But mitochondrial genetic engineering proves my larger point that I want to convince you of this evening, that a middle ground approach is better than an outright ban. You'll hear my opponents talking about opening floodgates to a dystopia of designing perfect babies, but technology itself is not evil. Only misuse and misapplication of it is. We aren't here to defend every type of genetic engineering. We're here to urge you to vote in favor of a middle ground, to allow parents and private citizens to make private choices about one of the most intimate decisions they will ever make, to bring a healthy child into the world.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores. The motion is prohibit genetically engineered babies.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
And a reminder of what's going on, we are halfway through the opening round of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate, where the motion is prohibit genetically engineered babies. You have heard two of the opening statements, and now on to the third. In support of the motion to prohibit genetically engineered babies, Robert Winston, he is a professor of science and society and emeritus professor of fertility studies at Imperial College London. Ladies and gentlemen, Robert Winston.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is actually quite a simple proposition. What our opponents are recommending is something which Americans shiver at, which is experimentation without the consent of the individual being experimented upon. It's worth looking very briefly at American history. The history of eugenics, which started probably in Britain with Francis Galton back in the 1850s, is still a scar to some extent on genetics. I think had a great deal of responsibility for the sterilization of women without consent, with the prevention of people who might want to make love together because they are different races, were prevented by law in many states in the United States. And this is something, of course, which directly influenced the Nazi Holocaust. And although it may seem far-fetched, it's worth bearing in mind that at a time when the planet is oppressed by the risk of global warming, by the risk of conflict, by the risk of all sorts of serious issues on the economy, it may well be that people might want to see eugenics raising its ugly head again. Now, as my partner has said, mitochondrial disease, let's just knock that on the head straight away. Mitochondrial disease, although it's a terrible thing to have, it is really trivial in terms of its incidence. It's a very, very uncommon disorder. And it's worth bearing in mind that abnormal children have been born as a result of mitochondrial transfer. This has been completely unpredictable. And of course, with regard to disease, it is quite clear that screening embryos is a much better bet. If we take a cell away or we look at the biochemistry of an embryo, which we can now do, and detect the disease, we can simply substitute that embryo for another one in a clutch of eggs, because of course, it's worth bearing in mind that the average childbearing woman watching this program will lose two eggs during the course of the program, each genetically unique. The males, meanwhile, have made some 70,000 new sperm. Each of those are equally genetically unique, and every embryo is different. And therefore, to screen embryos which have a clear disease by the techniques which have now been developed is certainly possible and much safer than meddling with the genome. Now, the big problem, of course, is that genetic engineering is unpredictable. The most common place for genetic modified animals, of course, is in the pharmaceutical industry. Pretty well every drug is now tested on animals where their genes have been modified to make a model for human disease or to look at the action of that drug. And if you look at the figures which have been published by two of the largest companies in the world with very large series of mouse models, you can see the problem you'd have with genetic engineering. AstraZeneca published 51 different models, a vast number of mice in those models. 70%, ladies and gentlemen, of those animals were abnormal, and the abnormality was unpredictable. The animals were not followed up for long term. They were simply discarded. So we don't know what would have happened to them in old age. But we do know that changing genetics makes a difference to what happens to us in old age. And certainly, the fetal origins of adult disease are very important. We know, for example, that stroke, diabetes, some cancers may be caused by what happens in the environment of an embryo early on. So let's just say one other thing, if I may, and that is that one of the problems, of course, is that one may modify genes, but we don't even know whether they will continue to function in the way. And there is a lot of evidence from the work we do in my own laboratory which shows that gene expression in a modified animal stops during development. Ladies and gentlemen, you have a responsibility here. You have a duty to lead the world to make certain that your medicine is ethical. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert Winston. And our final debater against the motion, prohibit genetically engineered babies, he is against the prohibition. I'd like to introduce Lee Silver. He is a professor of molecular biology and public policy at Princeton. He is also founder and principal science advisor of GenePeaks, a personal genomics company. Ladies and gentlemen, Lee Silver.
Thank you. The proposition this evening is prohibit genetically engineered babies. Prohibit even if the purpose is to promote health. Prohibit even if it's safe. Prohibit even if the technology is safer than doing nothing. I just need to convince you of one example of acceptability, and you should vote to oppose the proposition. So what are we talking about here tonight when we talk about genetic engineering? Conceptually, it's very simple. Genetic engineering will allow prospective parents to give their child genetic information that they themselves do not carry. And to understand what parents might want to give their children, we should examine the facts of genetics that have become available to us over the last 5 to 10 years, have given us a very different perspective on the human genome than we had previously. I want you to look at the person sitting to the right, and if there's no one on the right, look at the person sitting to the left. That person and you differ at over 1 million locations in your DNA. Most of those differences don't do anything, but even if you're a healthy adult, at least 100 of those genetic variants can cause deadly childhood disease. Not in you, of course, because you're sitting in the audience, but in your grandchildren or their grandchildren. And all in all, some of us are born with better health genes and some are not. Now, if you have made a decision, you or a daughter or granddaughter have made a decision to have a child, what do you hope for the most in that child? You hope for a healthy child. You'll love any child, but you hope for a healthy child. But you might worry, doesn't this violate Mother Nature? Well, I'm here to tell you that Mother Nature doesn't care at all about you or your baby. Throughout the history of the human species, Mother Nature has engaged in all-out warfare against us with infectious diseases caused by viruses and bacteria. And it's only in the last century that we gained the knowledge and power to fight back with vaccines and antibiotics and other medicines. With infectious diseases essentially vanquished in our society, although not everywhere in the world, the next target in our sights is Mother Nature's genetic wrath. Now, Mother Nature is a metaphor, and it's a really bad metaphor, because in reality, inheritance is a game of craps. You throw the dice, you hold your breath, you hope your child is healthy. It won't have to be that way in the future. When we learn how to take the genetic dice, place them on the table in the way that is going to promote health most likely for the child to be. I want to conclude that if you are thinking about voting for this proposition, you'll need to explain why you did so when your daughter or granddaughter comes to you with the following question. Dad, Grandpa, why can't I give my child health-promoting, disease-preventing genes that other children get naturally? If you can't answer that question, you must vote no on this proposition.
Thank you, Lee Silver. And that concludes round one of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate, where our motion is prohibit genetically engineered babies.
Morning, none of the news was good. Death machines were rumbling across the ground where Jesus stood. And the man on my TV told me it's always been that way. Then nothing anyone can do or say. I almost listen to him. Lost my mind, I regained my senses again. I looked into my heart to find I believed in one fine day all the children of Abraham will lay down their swords forever in Jerusalem. Maybe I'm only dreaming. Maybe I'm just a fool, but I don't remember learning how to hate in Sunday school. But somewhere along the West Street, and I never look back again, but I still find some courage. comfort now and then. And the storm comes rumbling in, and I can't lay me down, and the drums are drumming again. And I can't stand the sound, but I believe there come a day when the lion and the lamb will lie down in peace together in Jerusalem. There'll be no barricades then. There'll be no ivory walls. We can wash all this blood from our hands, and all this hatred from our souls. But I believe there'll come a day all the children of Abraham will lay down their swords forever in Jerusalem. Yeah, we must believe in one fine day all the children of Abraham will lay down their swords forever in Jerusalem.
And now for something completely different.